The speaker today will be introduced by Monica Ramirez. Ms. Ramirez is the Research Translation Coordinator for the University of Arizona Superfund Research Program. She has experience moving information and technology from researchers into the hands of decision makers at all levels. Some of her activities include building linkages and partnerships with U.S. and Mexican government agencies, creating innovative bilingual communication tools, and conducting informal learning experiences for people of all ages. She has an MPA in Environmental Sciences and Policy from Columbia University. Monica?
Thanks, Justin. Again, the overall goal of our Research Translation Corps is to actively communicate the research products generated by our Superfund research program to pertinent audiences and stakeholders in the most appropriate and effective manner. An output of that mission is the EPA's Superfund Research Program Seminar Series, which is a result of an ongoing collaboration between EPA Region 9 Superfund and Technology Liaison Mike Gill and myself. After Mike and I have discussed and delineated the scientific needs of the regional project managers and then the research strengths of the Superfund Research Program, we designed an information transfer series that has two parts. The first one is called Live at Region 9, where investigators will present at Region 9 headquarters. And the second is the Internet seminar, which we're about to hear, that incorporates the input and gained from the live presentation. So due to Mike Gill and I's success with working doing solely like the University of Arizona program and the seminar series, we have opened up the seminar series to all Superfund research programs within Region 9. We are very delighted to present Krishmira Kistova from the University of California, Davis, who will be presenting MTB and TBA cleanup new research perspectives. Dr. Hishova is a research associate professor of environmental microbiology in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources at the University of California, Davis. Dr. Hishova's research interests include biodegradation and bioremediation of MTBE and gas contaminants, quantitative molecular methods in microbial ecology, genome analysis of environmental organisms, and microbial biosensors for environmental monitoring. She has a BS in biology and an MS and PhD in microbiology from the St. Clement Orizhsky University, Sofia, Bulgaria. Dr. Silva's research activities in the last 10 years include understanding the complex role of microbial communities and environmental factors in biodegradation of MTBE and BTEX in field experiments. Her recent work contributed to elucidation of aerobic MTBE degradation pathway and the effects of MTBE and DTEX exposure on microbial community structure and function. With that, I am very honored and happy to pass over the mic to Dr. Sova. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you, Monica, for the introduction, and good afternoon, everyone. With this short presentation, I would like to introduce the concept of MTBE-TBA cleanup and reinjection of clean water back in the aquifer or post-treatment and for production of drinking quality of water. Both approaches are aiming to save our valuable resources, water, which is so actual and important with the climate change that we are facing nowadays. Now we are advancing to slide number 4, and shortly I would like to introduce you to MTB problem. MTB is a relatively new contaminant because it was introduced into the 70s, but it's getting to be an old environmental problem because due to the large production on average of 25 million tons per year, it's commonly deposited in subsurface water, and this is largely due to the unique characteristics of the compound, which has low sorption to soil, high solubility in water, and low biodegradability. And more than 250,000 spills in the U.S. are reported from underground storage and distribution systems. On the cartoon on the right of the slide is depicted an MTB plume, which is traveling down gradient with the groundwater flow, and it's very easy to reach drinking water wells. Occurrence of MTB into the environment, as I mentioned, is very common. It's detected in the groundwater of 49 states, and more than 10,000 sites are impacted by MTB in California. It's very common to be detected in the drinking water supplies, and the suggested limit by EPA is 20 ppb. In most of the environmental conditions which are anaerobic, degradation is very slow, and that's why significant groundwater migration often occurs of the plume. TBA, which is byproduct of MTB, is suspected carcinogen, and most of the microbial isolates that have been reported today could degrade MTB aerobically. On the next slide, slide number 6, we are seeing a map of California and a site-by-site comparison of the locations of leaking underground fuel tanks in California on the left, and on the right, the location of bubbling drinking water wells. If we overlap the two maps, we could see that the drinking water wells are in very close proximity to the detected contaminated sites. So this poses a serious threat for drinking water supply system in California, and there have been several incidents in the past. On the next slide, slide number 7, is you could see the chemical formula of the compound, which is methyl tertially butyl ether, and the announcement that State of California has determined that the use of this chemical presents a significant risk to the environment. And seven years ago, the State of California banned MTB, but still about 7 years after that, about 200 public supply wells in California have had to be taken offline. There are several undetected migrating plumes in the state as well. And after detection, high cost of cleanup, most of the cases, is reason for the cost to be passed to the consumer. TBA, a breakdown product or tertiary butyl alcohol, it accumulates in the field, and there are several reports that the concentration of the TBA is significantly higher than MTB in those contaminated sites. So there are several bioremediation approaches that could be applied to treat and clean up those contaminated sites, and such as natural attenuation. In this approach, we do nothing. We just wait and rely on native organisms and on their ability to degrade the compound with time. Or it could be active approaches such as in situ or ex situ bioremediation, in which case biostimulation of native organisms could be achieved by adding nutrients or electron acceptors, or in bioaugmentation approach, in addition to nutrients, some active microbial communities that degrade MTB and TBA could be introduced into the environment. In the ex situ approach, groundwater has to be pumped above ground and treated with different types of bioreactors. So, as I mentioned already, the TBA is even more threatening problem for the environment, and most of the MTB treatment system should be tested for the TBA treatment deficiency. The biological remediation of TBA is more effective than traditional adsorption and transtripping technologies due to the chemical properties of the compound. Another important consideration is that bioreactor effluent, in most of the cases, is discharged as wastewater because biological safety information for the effluent after treatment is not available. So in front of us, it stays objective to look more carefully for biological safety of those tested systems and how they efficiently treated TBA and how we could save the water after has been treated for those contaminants. In our lab, we are using several molecular tools to help us in approaches not only of monitored natural attenuation, but also in bioremediation approaches. With those molecular tools, we could look at microbial community structures and diversity, and we could answer the question who is present in particular contaminated sites. We have information for aerobic pathway of MTB degradation, and we could look functional genes, their expression and activity. And by this approach, we could answer the question, what are those microorganisms doing, and are they active in present time and space? In addition, chemical measurements are always applied to look for concentrations of contaminants and for appearing of byproducts of degradation. So several tools such as DNA fingerprinting, quantitative PCR, clone libraries, high-throughput sequencing, metagenomics, etc., could be very useful in those approaches. On the next slide, slide number 12, there is a list of most common or most well-studied environmental isolates that are able to degrade MTBE under aerobic conditions. There are several reports for anaerobic degradation of MTBE and TBA under field conditions, but unfortunately there is no pure culture isolated until to date that we could study more about the pathway of degradation or nutrients requirement and so on. So still there is limited information about the mechanism of degradation of these compounds under anaerobic conditions. In addition, based on our field observations and several other reports, many MTB degraders, which are co-metabolizers, that means that degrade the compound in addition to growing to another carbon source, such as alkane, for example, they slow down or stop during MTB biodegradation on the level of TBA formation. So you could see the step on the slide that TBA is formed and then the pathway does not proceed further down. So this is the reason for TBA accumulation in the field, most of the cases. And most likely, the enzyme for breaking down TBA is not present in those organisms. But in the last 10 years, bioregulation was frequently reported in many field sites also in the aerobic conditions in the lab. One of the first isolates as a pure culture is strain PM1, or recently we named this strain Methylidium petrolifilum, which has been isolated in 95 from a compost filter treating offset gas from oil refinery. And after 1 year of this compost filter operation, MTB degradation has been noticed, and mixed culture containing this strain has been enriched, and after that, strain PM1 was isolated as a pure culture. One of the unique abilities of this strain is to degrade TBA and completely to CO2 and to use it for growth. It's aerobic flagellated gram-negative frog, degrades MTBE and TBA, as I mentioned, completely. It belongs taxonomically to beta-proteobacteria in the unique physiological group of Acrobacterium rubrivivax leptotrix. It's unique because those are very diverse bacteria by their function. They almost have nothing in common. That's why this is a new genus and species based on several characteristics. Recently, the whole genome was sequenced in collaboration with Lawrence Livermore National Lab and Joint Genome Institute, and the findings from those genome analyses have been published in Journal of Bacteriology and in Applied and Environmental Microbiology. One of the new discoveries based on the whole genome sequence was the presence of megaplasmids, and we determined after that with microarrays and genetic studies that the genes for MTBE bioregulation pathway are located on these big plasmids. PM1 has unique degradation abilities and can grow aerobically on ethanol, methanol, MTB, alkanes, short to middle chain alkanes, toluene, benzene, ethyl benzene, phenol, and dehydroxybenzoates. It has high degradation rates with MTB, TBA, toluene, phenol, not only when those are present as a single substrate, but also in mixtures. Two operons for benzene and toluene degradation have been located on the chromosome based on our genome studies, you know, also metacleavage pathway for catechol and methyl catechols. So those functions has been also confirmed but by our whole genome sequencing. So in the field, how it works or how we could use those organisms to treat MTB and TBA. And microorganisms are like people, and what they need is oxygen as an essential electron acceptor and nutrients to survive, grow, and multiply. In this case, bioreactors provide this home for those microorganisms to actually eat contaminants. In our case, this is MTB and TBA. And I'm going to introduce to you, currently we are on slide 16, two examples for ex situ bioremediation. And the first example is in the location is North Hollywood. You can see it on this Google map and on the picture, which is location of major drinking water aquifer for LA County. And this is, there was occurrence of high concentration MTB spill from the sterile gas service station. And the example is of a treatment of this contaminated drinking water aquifer using native MTB degrading bacteria that colonized an ex situ bioreactor. So the question that we've been asking here in collaboration with several different institutions, such as UC Davis, Haley and Aldrich Incorporation, Tesoro Companies, Department of Health Services, Miller Brooks Environmental Consultants, Water Resources Control Board, and many others, was: can bioreactors successfully treat MTB, and can clean groundwater be returned to the aquifer? And in this case, groundwater was pumped into the bioreactor that oxygen and nutrients have been provided, and MTB degradation was established within 4 weeks. And this is quite different than the original plan. So the original plan was actually to use bioreactor, which is inoculated with culture of PM1. On slide number 18, you have seen a simplified schematic of the overall bioreactor design. MTB contaminated water is pumped from the wells into a storage tank where it's then aerated using hydrogen peroxide and where nutrients are added to the influent. The influent is split and enters the two primary treatment tanks, and each is packed with 800 kilograms of virgin granulated activated carbon and holds approximately 1600 liters of water. Because of the low affinity of MTB to GAC, in this case, GAC acts as more as a carrier material for the bacteria than as MTB sorptive material. The rationale for exploring self-sealing of the bioreactor instead of using inoculation with pure culture of PM1 was based on preliminary studies done by our lab using sediment and groundwater from the North Hollywood aquifer. We constructed lab microcosms in which oxygen, except for headspace, was not added, and no other amendments like nitrogen or phosphorus were added. In other words, this is very not optimal conditions, and we did not see those microcosms in this particular experiment, although we did a separate one that was seeded with PM1. In those microcosms, we observe that seeded microcosms begin degradation faster, but both seeded and unseeded showed MTB degradation. In the unseeded microcosm, and MTB degradation was down to below 1 1-PPB. So this is the reason for trying to inoculate this bioreactor with native organisms which are present into the groundwater. On the next slide, slide number 19, you're seeing also actual photo of the bioreactor. And the answer to the question that we didn't need to inoculate with organisms from somewhere else, because MTB biodegradation was established with 4 weeks after startup of the bioreactor and starting pumping of groundwater. And we monitored not only MTB removal, but also using molecular methods, we've been looking at native bacteria rapidly have been established and colonized the bioreactor. On slide 20, you see the results when we have been using quantitative PCR based on 16S ribosomal RNA. And based on this molecular methods, we could quantify total bacteria that are attached to the bioreactor granulated activated carbons, and those are cells per cubic centimeter of material. And the establishment of those bacteria was very fast, and they've been established and stayed in the range of 10 to the 8 cells per cubic centimeter of GAC. In addition, we've monitored PM1 bacteria as an organism which has been present, and this is a member of MTB degrading community. And we observed that native PM1 colonized the reactor very fast, and number increased around 1,000 times when the MTB degradation has been established. In addition, we monitored bacterial cells which are present in the influent and in the effluent, and we observed that the numbers are the same as total bacteria that are present. On the next slide is illustration of how we've been using DNA fingerprinting to look the structure of microbial communities. And those are, again, attached bacteria in the bioreactor over the course of 52 weeks. The first lane shows the influent bacterial community, which is the groundwater, actually. And then the next lines are the attached bacteria from the startup period when the MTB concentration was very high, we could see only few dominant bands. Roughly one band is different species. So we could count the number of bands and to estimate how many different species are present at certain points, at certain time and space. And when the concentration dropped to in the range of PPB level, we could see, again, increase in the diversity of the bands or increase in the diversity of microbial communities. Sequencing of the three dominant bands reveal that those are match to in sequence of our laboratory strain of very similar, 99% similar. Rubrin vivax is also in the phylogenetic group of bacteria to PM1, so very close relative. So in addition, molecular analysis of groundwater organisms of influent and effluent show that the structure of the community in the influent and the effluent is the same. So this is an important finding due to the use of this robust and efficient molecular method. On the next slide, slide 22, we could see the plume size and concentration decreased with the time and 1 year after the reactor operation. The size is significantly smaller, so it's showing the efficient treatment of the plume. And year and a half after that, the site has been shut down. To answer the question, can bioreactors successfully treat MTB and can clean groundwater be returned to the aquifer? In this particular project, the answer is yes, because consistent removal of MTB without formation of toxic products has been observed. bioreactors have been colonized by native microbes, not by inoculants, and our molecular methods also brought additional evidence for the safety of returning this treated groundwater back to the aquifer. So this was approved by state regulators, and actually it will save over 10 million gallons of water annually. So it's a good example of monitoring and efficient treatment to save our water. In a summary of this first part and this study, there is considerable potential for native microbial communities to degrade MTB and TBA simply by addition of oxygen, and colonization of bioreactors by native microbial population could support ex situ bioremediation. The injection of clean bioreactor effluent into the aquifer could save billions of dollars. In our case, microbial ecology tools help to understand microbial community dynamics, activity, and also in the design of remediation strategy. Another example for ex situ bioremediation that we applied is at the site of Glenville, which is a small town into the uphills. And this, the town of Glenville was supplied by private well water, but due to MTB, TBA, and BTEX contamination from leaking underground storage tank, the town was without local water supply since 1998. We came in 2008 to this town, and we demonstrated a short project. The purpose of the project was a demonstration that we could apply technology to clean this drinking water aquifer, and also to have technology to produce clean water that could be reinjected of the aquifer, and also to show that technology could be utilized to produce water with drinking water quality. On slide number 26, you see a first community meeting at Glenville that we are introducing our approach to the members of the community. And this project is a partnership not only with the members of the community of Glenville, also the Community Water Company, the State of California's Department of Health Services, the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board, and Environmental Resolution Incorporation. Here we are on slide 27, which is just a brief showing of our flyer to the Glenville residents, depicting the idea of bioreactor to be used for ex situ treatment of this drinking water aquifer, and also the idea of using post treatment for producing a drinking water quality water. And also, we promise that our translation coordinator for the UC Davis Superfunds program will taste the water in the end of our project, and indeed he did it. So, in this case, ex situ bioremediation has been achieved using fluidized bed bioreactor, and this bioreactor, in most of the cases, is inoculated with PM1 mixed culture. And PM1 mixed culture has been translated from UC Davis Superfund researchers to ERI in 2000. Since then, ERI fluidized bed bioreactors have been put into operation at over 30 sites in California, New Hampshire, and Maryland. The bioreactor includes an above-ground tank containing trillions of microorganisms that attach themselves to surfaces of the grains of sand, and the grains are distributed throughout the tank by the upward flow of the water passing through the tank for treatment. On the next slide is schematic illustration. The water from the contaminated sites enters the feed tank, where it is diluted with clean water that is already being processed through the bioreactor. And the mixed water stream is pumped to the bottom of the bioreactor, where it flows upward through the sand, which is colonized by microorganisms. The microorganisms consume MTB, TBA, and other gasoline contaminants, converting them to carbon dioxide and water. Some of the treated water with depleted oxygen contents flow from the bioreactor through an oxygenator, where it's reoxygenated and then is sent to the feed tank to dilute incoming contaminated water. The remaining treated water is discharged from the system. Initially, we have had the idea to explore a self-seeding of the bioreactor at Glenville, but due to winter conditions and probably due to very small populations of MTB degradation bacteria present in the water, we have not we were not able to establish community in this bioreactor for almost 1 month of operation, and during this time we made the decision that the bioreactor has to be inoculated with sand from established bioreactor, and we notify the Glenville community and proceed. Again, even after inoculation, the establishment of microbial communities has been faster, and MTB degradation started following the inoculation. Due to winter conditions and freezing temperature, we haven't been able to release some of the effluent of the bioreactor above ground, and that's why the reactor was in recirculation mode for almost 96 days until the mid-March, when the temperature were more normal, and we've been able to switch the bioreactor to operation mode. On the next slide, slide number 30, it's illustration of oxygenate degradation in the bioreactor. So MTB and or TBA is parts per million. And there are three phases of the bioreactor. First, the bioreactor inoculations, bioreactor in recirculation mode until the run mode was initiated. In the first phase of the run mode, you can see that in blue is the influent MTB and influent TBA in red, while in a dark brown color is the effluent MTB, and in dark brown color is effluent TBA, and in green effluent MTB. So what we see here that in run mode, the bioreactor successfully treated both MTB and TBA, and concentrations in the last 3 months of the reactor operations are very close to detection limit. On the next slide, slide 31, it's illustration that we've been looking for PM1 cells as a representative for MTB degrading communities, which have been attached to the sand in the bioreactor, and we see that PM1 numbers are proportion of the total population of bacteria reach their peak 17% on day 47. Again, here in the beginning, the reactor was in the recirculation mode. When the reactor has been turned into run mode, I would like to illustrate here that PM1 numbers remained above 8% of the total population. We've been observing MTB degradation, and what we could see that influent MTB and corresponding TBA concentrations varied significantly over the time. And the relative numbers of PM1 bacteria varied in correlations with the TBA influent concentrations. On the next slide, I just would like to introduce the concept for biological safety, because fluidized bed bioreactors were developed for nitrate removal from drinking water in Europe in the 80s. And have been used in several occasions for treatment of contaminants. But this is still a very relatively new concept for the U.S. And limited information in general is available in the literature regarding their biological safety. There are only a few examples for utilization of this approach. In 1998, the first biological denitrification plant in the U.S. was put in service to provide drinking water to the town of Coyle, Oklahoma. In this study, the lack of availability of comprehensive pathogen monitoring methods forced regulators to require the installation of downstream membrane technology for microbe removal from such systems. Another example is the use of static bed bioreactor for treatment of perchlorate contaminated groundwater has received conditional certification for the production of drinking water in California in 2005. To determine biological safety of final waters produced by a sand-based fluidized bed bioreactor, we consider pathogens that have been identified as pathogens of concerns for the groundwater environment. And those are pathogens such as anthropogenic E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, and some opportunistic pathogens such as Campylobacter, Aeromonas, Legionella, Vibrio, Yersinia, Mycobacterium, Avium complex, and so on. We also monitored for coliform and heterotrophic plate counts. In this study, we did not consider viruses and enteric protozoa such as Giardia and Cryptosporidium because they cannot multiply in water in the absence of animal hosts. On slide 35, our snapshot of the results for pathogens monitoring in Glenville bioreactors. And our results show that have not been detected most of the pathogens under study, such as E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, Campylobacter, Yersinia, Vibrio, and Mycobacterium. But Aeromonas hydrophila, which is an opportunistic pathogen, has been detected. What has to be noticed here that those organisms, their numbers decreased across the bioreactor, so their numbers in the effluent are significantly lower than in the influent. But due to observation for the presence of some of those opportunistic pathogens, we proposed a drinking water production system to be consisted of bacterial-grade filter followed by UV sterilization if we would like to produce a drinking water quality water from the effluent. On the next slide, I'm presenting additional data for the safety of the bioreactors operated by ERI. Two bioreactors, one located in Lake Forest and the other in Hillsburg. In those bioreactors, what we've noticed is present of some numbers of Legionella and Aeromonas. But again, the numbers in the effluent were significantly slower than the influent of the bioreactor, which indicates that the bioreactor does not support growth of those organisms, or in some cases, those are below detection limit. Legionella, the presence of Legionella in groundwater also raises significant concerns for the safety and brings the point that ongoing pathogen monitoring should be in place when bioreactors have been used to produce water that could be injected back into the aquifer, or it has to have post-treatment system for production of water with drinking water quality. Another significant observation that I would like to point out is the heterotrophic plate count, which is indication for total numbers of bacteria. And again, into the bioreactor effluent, the numbers are lower than in the influent and meets the EPA limit of 500 coliforming units per milliliter for suggested treatment system for production of water. In summary, for this particular study, bioreactors efficiently could treat MTBE and TBA and BTEX And here I would like to point again to the unique degradation abilities of one of the dominant members of MTB degrading community, PM1. Inoculation with MTB degrading organisms has to be evaluated on case-by-case basis. For example, inoculation has not been necessary in North Hollywood, but it was very necessary for our study in Glanville. So it's based on environmental conditions and several other factors. In our Glanville study, we observed higher proportions of PM1 as a percentage of total bacteria occurring in samplings following a peak of MTB or TBA in the influent. So the presence of food supports more high numbers of these organisms. And reductions in oxygenate concentration led to reductions in PM1 ratios to total bacteria. Potentially pathogenic microorganisms were either not detected or their numbers decreased across the bioreactors in all our samplings. And based on the results of bacterial loads, contaminant analysis, and physical characterization of treated effluent waters, I could suggest that sand-based fluidized bioreactors can produce water of similar cool quality to uncontaminated source groundwater. And again, I would like to make this point very strongly that comprehensive testing for pathogens by high-throughput methods is not available yet, but there are several other methods that could be used and have to be tested. And conventional drinking water treatment technology and testing is recommended following this MTB and TBA removal for production of clean water. On the next slide, I just would like to mention slide number 39 with a few words, some new approaches that we are developing in our lab for application for environmental monitoring, such as using of nanoparticles and developing assays in solutions which are on the top of the nanoparticles, which serve as a carrier for detection of functional genes. And this could be developed further for using in small biosensors for field monitoring. Another approach for field monitoring of those MTB and TBA degrading bacteria, but also we are working on developing a biosensor for quantification of MTB and TBA, which is also based on genetic approach for promoter fusion and then expressing of this construct in environmental strain to have a whole cell-based assay to be able to quantify MTB or TBA concentrations. So this is work in progress that we hope very soon to be applicable for environmental studies. In the end, I would like to thank my collaborator, Kate Cowell, postdoctoral researchers working in our lab, Radomir Schmidt and Arjong Sun, Kristen Hicks, was a PhD student working on the North Hollywood project, Vince and Adriana, graduate students working on the PM1 physiology, Gitika Joshi is currently working on MTB regulation, and Steve Holland on biosensors. I would like to thank our collaborators from Haley and Aldrich, and specifically Paul Ternatori, from ERI, Joe O'Connell, Dave Klein, the whole Glanville community for their involvement in the project in Glanville and the funding from the NIH Superfund program, and specifically from the Department of Health and Human Services and the program to promote partnership for environmental public health. Thanks a lot for your attention, and I'm ready to answer questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hristova. Before we open the question and answer session to the presenter, I just wanted to make sure that everyone is aware of the links page and the online feedback form, which is slide 41. So on the links page, we have assembled resources directly applicable to today's topic. Associated with the links page is an online feedback form. We ask that you consider filling out the online feedback form. We, as mentioned earlier, we do look at your comments as we continue to try to improve the content and delivery mechanism. Links to the additional resources page and the feedback form are on the last slide of the presentation. Also on the additional resources page is a survey developed by the University of Arizona SRP titled Improving Collaborations Among Academic Institutions and Remediation Stakeholders. Please take a moment to fill out that survey as well. And again, that is after you click on the additional resources page, it will be listed there. So I will now open the question and answer session. If you have a question on the phone lines, please take your phone off mute by pressing *6, state your name and organization, and go ahead and ask your question. Okay, while we wait for the phone participants to gather their thoughts and formulate their questions, I will take a question from one of the simulcast participants. This is in reference to slide 19. It says, the slide appears to show a water heater in the photograph. How sensitive to temperature changes was your microbial community?
Well, the temperature is relatively constant in bioreactors even if a water heater is not applied. And usually the rate of degradation is increasing with the temperature. So in freezing conditions, if the reactor is not into the shade or outside, then we should expect probably a slower rate of degradation. But we haven't observed anything like that in our studies.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another minute to see if phone line participants have a question. If you do have a question, you must take your phone off mute first by pressing *6 and possibly additionally your own mute button on your phone. So if you have a question, please go ahead and state your name, organization, and ask your question. Okay, we'll take another one from one of the online participants. Does California have a drinking water quality standard for MTBE? What is that standard? Was the bioreactor treatment system able to consistently reach that level of performance or standard?
Yes, the standard is below 20 ppb, and the bioreactor was consistently reaching this standard, and in the end, it was even below this standard. And that's why it's one of the reasons also together with the other considerations that I mentioned for this effluent to be recharged back to the groundwater.
Okay, we will stay with simulcast participants. The next question is, what sort of flow rates are achieved in these bioreactors? 10 GPM, 100 GPM?
The flow rate in the reactor in North Hollywood is around 10 ppm.
Okay, thank you. Let's see this next question. Can you speak to the costs, capital and operational, of implementation relative to traditional methods?
So it's difficult for me to give this overview for the cost because I don't know what exactly traditional methods means, but the concept that I'm introducing for using bioreactors for saving water and using this water to be recharged back into the aquifer, it basically needs only additional careful monitoring for the safety of those bioreactors. And if we would like to use this water for drinking water production, that the only additional cost is for the installation of downstream, for example, in our case, biological filter and UV treatment system, which is not such a high cost. The cost is for monitoring of those pathogens, and it depends on the established monitoring program how often this has to be done. But our results showing that the post-treatment with this biological treatment system is very efficient, and there were no pathogens detected in the F1 went from the post-treatment system.
Okay, thank you. While you've been answering a few of these questions, I believe one of your colleagues or collaborators, Sue Boyle with Haley and Aldrich, has been commenting as well. She says the picture on slide 19 is not actually from the subject site and seems to be been used there by mistake, so that was in reference to the hot water heater that was there. And she also says that the drinking water standard is 13 micrograms per liter with a secondary of 5 parts per billion. The North Hollywood site reached non-detect at 0.5 parts per billion with the reactor re-injecting water at a level, at that level or below. So just wanted to make those clarifications. We will now go again to the phone lines. We have a few more questions from the simulcast participants, but let's see if there are any phone line participants who would like to ask a question. Again, just take your phone off mute, state your name and organization, and ask your question. Okay, I guess from here on out we can stick with the simulcast participants. Next question is, how good of an indicator of bioreactor performance is the relative proportion of PMI, and how well did MTBE and TBA concentrations correlate with changes in PMI makeup of the community?
PM1 has been used as an indicator of MTB degrading community. It's not the only member of this community, but has a good correlation between MTB concentration, between disappearance of MTB concentrations, e.g. removal of MTB, and increase of the number of this organism. In general, when there are high concentrations of MTB and TB present, there are high numbers of PM1. When the concentrations go low, then there is decrease in populations of PM1. So we've been observing this not only in bioreactors, but in more detailed studies in microcosms and so on. So that's why there are several studies, including the two that I presented also in Vandenberg Air Force and Parshinini, that we observed a good correlation between MTB concentrations, fluctuations in those concentrations, and the numbers of PM1.
Okay, thank you. As of now, we have one more simulcast question, so if you do have a last-minute question, please go ahead and submit that. The last question, or for now at least, is, I understood that fixed-bed GAC, or granulated activated carbon, reactor systems were no longer being supported by the former manufacturers. Is that also your understanding?
Unfortunately, I cannot answer this question. Probably you or someone else on the line from Haley and Aldrich could help with that.
Yeah, I cannot answer that question, but we will go ahead and forward that on to your collaborators that will hopefully be able to. One last try, if there's anyone on the phone that would like to ask a question, or any of the simulcast participants, if you would like to ask a question, this is your last chance, so we'll wait just a second. Okay, well, if there are no more questions at this time, you can contact Dr. Christova via email with additional questions. Her email address is on the additional resources page. To conclude, I would like to thank Monica Ramirez for organizing the webinar and, of course, our presenter, Dr. Krasimira Christova. That concludes today's webinar. I appreciate your participation. Thank you.